show here in the Head On Radio Network. Thanks to Billy Shears, music director. And I want you to remember, you heard from the radical right.
This is the Quality News Network. U.S. military officials in Iraq are criticizing the Iraqi government for failing to come together. Army Lieutenant General Raymond Odierno, the commander of day-to-day U.S. operations in Iraq, says a window of opportunity has opened with the decrease in attacks. However, the Iraqi government has not agreed on a new power-sharing arrangement. The U.S. military says that in October, the number of roadside bombs in Iraq has dropped to the lowest figure since September of 2005. A U.S. general credits Iran's commitment to stop the flow of weapons into Iraq as the reason for the drop. Although the House passed a $50 billion spending bill for the Iraq war last night, which is tied to a troop withdrawal by the end of next year, Democratic leaders are uncertain about the bill's prospects in the Senate. They say they won't pay for the war unless it is tied to a timetable for pulling out U.S. troops, a condition President Bush has insisted he will veto. Former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto is trying to form an alliance with other opposition leaders. She wants to replace current President General Pervez Musharraf, who imposed emergency rule earlier this month. Musharraf appointed an interim prime minister to run the government until parliamentary elections are held in January. In a speech today, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas called for the overthrow of the Hamas leaders in Gaza. They took over power by force earlier this year. The U.S. is hosting a Middle East peace conference later this month. The UN Nuclear Watchdog Agency reports that Iran has generally been truthful about main aspects of its nuclear history. However, the agency warns that its current knowledge of Tehran's atomic work is decreasing. It also finds that Iran continues to defy the UN Security Council demands to halt the enrichment of uranium, which is a key step in the production of nuclear weapons or energy. Several strong aftershocks with a magnitude 6.2 and 6.6 struck northern Chile less than 24 hours after yesterday's 7.7 magnitude earthquake. About 15,000 people have been left homeless, 150 people were injured, and two were killed by the first quake. A powerful cyclone hit Bangladesh and forced more than 3 million people to flee their homes and head inland. It had 149-mile-an-hour winds. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business Next.
Have you ever found yourself swatting at a fly no one else sees? Chances are you're seeing what we commonly call a floater. Many people have them and have had them for a while. Floaters are condensed proteins located in the gel-like part of our eyes called the vitreous. As we age, this gel becomes more liquefied, and so whatever debris was once trapped inside is now freer to float around. They are typically harmless, but you should check with your eye doctor if you notice new floaters, especially if they appear after a flash of light, or if you should notice a curtaining effect of your side vision. Otherwise, that squiggly critter you see, especially when you look at a blue sky or a white background, is probably with you for life and should simply be ignored. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on eye care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
A federal appeals court today voided the new mileage standards for light trucks that were set to go into effect next year. 11 states and environmental groups filed the lawsuit, which would have covered SUVs, minivans, and pickup trucks. At the Los Angeles Auto Show, the Chevrolet Tahoe Hybrid was named the Green Car of the Year. It is General Motors' first model to use a hybrid system developed with BMW, Mercedes, and Chrysler. AAA expects that a record number of Americans, 38.7 million, will travel at least 50 miles or more over the extended five-day Thanksgiving holiday period. Gasoline prices nationwide now average $3.11 a gallon. President Bush announced a plan today to allow the airline plans to use military airspace to relieve air traffic congestion over the Thanksgiving travel period. The Labor Department reports that consumer prices went up 0.3% in October. London-based Barclays announced it will write down $2.7 billion related to the U.S. subprime mortgage market. Gold is trading at $787.30 an ounce, light sweet crude trading at $93.43 a barrel. And near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones is down 122 points, the NASDAQ is down 26 points, and the S&P 500 is down 19. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It is the Week in Review. All topics are valid. Let me tell you what's on my mind, and if you've got something on your mind, you know what to do. Just give us a call, 877-4-HEAD-ON. First, I want to talk about something that, well, really isn't much in the news, but how I wouldn't be surprised if hundreds of thousands of Iraqis were to die in a matter of hours, and that how that could happen any day now. I'll get to that in a minute. I also want to talk about war funding in Congress, the new legislation out of the House of Representatives to give the president $50 billion he seeks for the war, but insist on a withdrawal by the end of the year, and it's the bill's prospects in the Senate. Also want to go into health care, really talking about the economics of health care. We often talk about the moral implications of leaving 47 million Americans and millions of American children devoid of health care, devoid of health care insurance. But what about the economic implications? The Republican plan, interestingly enough, is not just bad for people. It's not just morally corrupt. It's economically corrupt. I want to talk about the situation in Pakistan a little bit, if we can, and also my thoughts on Valerie Plame, who has been speaking out a bit because of her book that has just come out and why that reawakened all the anger in my soul. And if there's time, I want to talk about the U.S. military and how they are criticizing now the government of Iraq for not basically making a Sunni-Shia reconciliation. Really? And they think that's important. Really? Nice to know they're coming around to finally seeing what we on the Horn have been talking about for several years now. But if there's a topic that you want to discuss, you know what to do. Call 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Let me start with how I think it is quite possible, indeed almost likely, that any day now, up to 500,000 Iraqis may die in a matter of hours. Boy, that sounds like extreme doomsday scenario. And the question is it a nuclear bomb? No. A nuclear bomb, such as one we dropped over Hiroshima, only killed 100,000 or so, even after days and years of radiation poisoning, maybe 200,000 or so. This could kill 500,000. That may be all the civilians killed in the Iraqi war thus far, and we could double it in a single day. And it wouldn't be done with explosives. It wouldn't be done with nuclear weapons. It wouldn't be done with fire or with biological or chemical weapons. It would be done with water. It would be done with the breakdown of the Mosul Dam. Claimed in 2006 by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers as, quote, the most dangerous dam in the world. It is about 250 miles north of Baghdad, and it holds back trillions of gallons of water. Two of Iraq's three largest cities would be in the path of the dam if it were to break, and I'm afraid to say it's in real trouble. It is, according to the 1980s, when it was constructed, a report argued that it was leaking like a sieve and ready to collapse as early as 2003. So this would be Katrina, only, maybe 200 times Katrina. And I recognize that it's not the United States' fault that the Iraqi government built a faulty dam. I understand that. But we're in the country now, not by any choice of mine. We are there. Can you imagine this catastrophe? First of all, just on a sheer moral level, sure, the Iraqi government should be fixing it, but the Iraqi government is largely, well, a creation of us. We're not doing very much. The U.S. has given out $27 million for repair and reinforcement, but there's very little progress toward a permanent solution. The waves that would come from the destruction of the Mosul Dam would be 65 feet high. Now, I raise this partly because, well, I don't want it to happen. And partly because if it does happen, I want to let you know that we knew about it in advance. As I'm sure you are aware, the New Orleans Times-Picayune ran a 7-part series on what would happen to New Orleans if the levees were to fail during a hurricane. And nobody listened. And nobody did anything. And Katrina happened. This dam, if it breaks, the estimates are, could kill as much as 500,000 people in hours. In hours. There's no way that that number of people could evacuate two of the nation's three largest cities that quickly. And who would be blamed? Of course, the United States. One more thing that, well, we should either spend money on in Iraq or get the heck out before we can be blamed. It's amazing, the law of unintended consequences. For all the discussion of what's going on in Iraq and the lack of reconciliation between Sunnis and Shias, it may just take a man-made slash natural disaster, because it is really a man-made disaster. It really may just take that to completely put Iraq in shambles for, I don't know, hundreds of years to come. No good news there. But as we look at the debate in Congress over whether to continue funding the war, I just thought I'd mention another potential problem. Of course, the main problem that people are talking about, that the U.S. military is talking about, is how they're blaming the Iraqi government now for failing to reconcile Shias and Sunnis. Really. The Iraqi government, as you know, is majority Shia, because the country is majority Shia. But what the Iraqis don't seem to understand, as most Americans, but not all of us understand, is that a democracy is not merely about majority rule. You can have what our founders called tyranny of the majority. No, a true democracy is one that has minority rights. And one of the reasons why we see the incipient civil war in Iraq is because the Sunni, who are the minority population, are not being given minority rights by the Shia government. Add that to the fact that the Sunni used to be in control of the government through Saddam Hussein, and you see why they're not happy with the current situation, and why the Shia, who are the majority, don't want to give them any pull. Well, now we have the U.S. military saying, look, we've dampened down violence for a time. Now's your chance. Political reconciliation. And it's not happening. It's not happening largely because Maliki, the prime minister, is using the money we're giving him to help train not an Iraqi military that represents all of Iraq, but some Shia death squads. That's right, our money is going to Shia death squads. And in the West, in Al-Anbar province, where we're fighting Al-Qaeda, our money is going to Sunni death squads, who are happily taking our money and arms and training now. After all, they used to use it to attack us, to kill our troops. Right now, they're not. They're using it to consolidate their power, to get rid of Al-Qaeda, which is a threat to their power. But do you really doubt that they're going to use it against us? Do you really doubt that they're going to use it against the Shia? Are we really so stupid as to believe that when Shia and Sunni are both being armed to the teeth, to the tunes of tens of billions of dollars, or hundreds of billions of dollars, that they're really just using all these arms to make nice? That they're really only using these arms to fight Al-Qaeda and Iran? No! They're taking them, they're thanking us for the training, they're smiling, and they're waiting. Waiting till the inevitable moment when we leave, when they can begin the great Iraqi civil war. Some of them, no doubt, are using it to fund terrorist attacks against the United States and the West. And yet George Bush wants more money. He wants more money. He wants $80 billion more for his war. And the question is, how will the Democrats in Congress respond? The House has already responded by a relatively close vote, 218 to 203. The House of Representatives has already passed a bill to give George Bush $50 billion with a very important proviso, providing that he withdraws troops from Iraq by December 2008. One more year, George, then you've got to let go, and you have to start withdrawing troops now. George Bush has threatened to veto the bill, and I have no doubt that he will if it passes the Senate. So the great question is, what is going to happen in the Senate? And I'll give you the inside scoop on that right after the break. If you want to call in and discuss this or any other topic, the toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to the Head-On Radio Network.
When I'm president, I'm going to say to members of Congress and members of my administration, including my cabinet, I'm glad that you have health care coverage and your family has health care coverage. But if you don't pass universal health care by July of 2009, in 6 months, I'm going to use my power as president to take your health care away from you. There's no excuse for politicians in Washington having health care when you don't have health care.
I'm John Edwards, and I approve this message.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's a week in review. All topics are valid. I want to thank Powerpuff for sending everyone in the chat room the website talking about the Mosul Dam. One of the things you'll find in that Truth Out article is that you really shouldn't laugh because half a million people could die. But this dam is built on gypsum, which dissolves when it comes into contact with water. Oops. A dam built on a rock that dissolves when it comes into contact with water. In fact, it regularly has sinkholes that form periodically as the gypsum dissolves below the structure. Yikes. In fact, seepage from the dam is already funneling into a gushing stream of water that they are monitoring right now. So I do recommend everyone read the article that the Powerpuff has provided to us. It's extremely scary. And again, it shows how here we take something that, well, we didn't build, right? Saddam Hussein built. It's he who risked 500,000 lives of his people to build a dam on top of a rock that dissolves in water. But as Colin Powell so prophetically said, we broke it, now we bought it. Now the dam is our responsibility, and quite a dangerous one, in fact. Imagine any day now, if that dam collapses, it could be the single bloodiest day perhaps in world history. I can't think of a day in world history where 500,000 people died. As I said, even the bomb we dropped in Hiroshima killed in the low hundreds of thousands, but not 500,000. Yikes. Yikes. So are we going to get out of Iraq? Well, the House has passed a bill. For all of you who condemn the Democrats, you should note that they managed to whip the party into shape, and they got a majority, 218, to pass a bill that says that the United States will have to leave Iraq within 1 year, which, by the way, is about as much time as it will take to leave Iraq anyway. The drawdown has to start now. They passed the bill. What's going to happen next? Well, the president says he's going to veto it. So Harry Reid in the Senate has two choices. Okay? Either he can do nothing, don't pass any bill, don't give the president any funding, or the Republicans have offered him a deal. They'll allow the House bill to be heard in the Senate, the one that gives the president $50 billion but requires withdrawal from Iraq. If he also allows an up or down vote on the $70 billion the president wants, no questions asked. And if Harry Reid accepts the deal and the Senate passes the bill that's identical to the House bill, no question Bush will veto it. No question that'll be some kind of propaganda victory, I guess, for the Democrats to show they're trying to stop the troops, get them out of Iraq, get them home safely, get us all home before the dam bursts, literally and figuratively, as a matter of violence. And the president vetoing the bill, I guess, would be a propaganda victory. But here's the problem. We do not have a majority of senators, I don't think. I don't know. But I'm not so sure we could get a majority of senators to vote for that bill. We may. We may. I suspect, though, they can get a majority of senators to vote for the $70 billion, no questions asked. I don't want to take the risk. The Senate did pass a withdrawal bill once before. But see, if we get rid of the filibuster in both cases, if we allow up or down votes on $70 billion, no question asked, and on the $50 billion combined with withdrawal, my fear is both will pass. I think it's quite likely, given that the Democrats only have the majority they have is based on independent Bernie Sanders, who's a socialist and is very reliable to the Democrats. That gives them 50. The 51 is given by Joe Lieberman, independent Democrat, someone who's actually not bad on domestic issues but is a firm supporter of the Bush administration when it comes to the war in Iraq. So actually, when it comes to the war in Iraq, you've got 50 Republicans, or 49 Republicans and Joe Lieberman and Dick Cheney. Now, there are a couple Republicans that are wavering, people like Senator Hagel of Nebraska. But you've got Democrats that are wavering, too, a whole host of conservative Democrats. Now, in 08, we can change this. I suspect that in 2008, We're going to win a number of seats in the Senate, maybe 4 or 5. By then, we may have the majorities we need to be able to take such a risk. But we can't do it now. We just don't have the numbers. And if Harry Reid accepts the Republican offer, let me suggest to you it's a poison offer. Because if they pass the bill we want them to pass, the Bush will veto it anyway. And if they pass the other bill, well, actually, I guess if they pass the other bill, the House can hold firm. That's true. We can hope that Nancy Pelosi holds firm, even if the Senate passes the $70 billion measure and doesn't pass that bill in the House. I guess that's possible. But I don't want to risk it. I think the safest option is this. Do nothing. That's right. Do nothing. The power of the purse belongs in Congress. The power of the purse is controlled by Congress. If they don't act, nothing happens. All Harry Reid has to say is no deal. No offers. We're not putting forward any spending bill in Iraq until the president tells us he's willing to negotiate with us as to terms of withdrawal. That's all he has to do. Stand firm. No bill. Sorry, Bush. Come negotiate with us or no bill. It's a blunt instrument, but it's the only one they have. And let's encourage Harry Reid to do the right thing. Jennifer is calling in. Jennifer, welcome to the Inside Scoop. Jennifer? Hello, Jennifer. There you are.
I'm here, and I have a lot of static on my phone.
Okay, well, so far you sound fine.
Oh,
except
for
your
I'm
cough,
dead.
Of course. It's that time of year.
A terrible storm here.
Where are you calling from?
Washington.
Washington State.
Yeah.
The other Washington.
The good Washington.
The good Washington.
The
okay, go
Washington.
Go. What's your comment or your question?
I'm going to have to call you back because I'm just having this awful problem with the cough now.
Okay, well, you take care of yourself. Sounds like you have a cold or something. These things happen.
I don't have a cold. I don't know what happened. Something just got in my throat.
Okay, all right, well, call back.
Please
do. Please do call back. And anyone else who wants to call in, it's easy to do. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. So my prescription is clear. And I don't know which way Harry Reid's going to go, honestly. It may be seen as the best propaganda victory to do both. You know, Republicans are say, why won't you give us an up or down vote? They're going to say that, right? These same people who filibustered all kinds of Democratic plans, like to do a minimum wage or to help student loans or even in health care. They're going to ask for an up or down vote in the $70 billion. But you know what? Harry Reid needs to stand firm. When the Republicans controlled the Congress, the Speaker of the House at that time, Dennis Hastert, had a rule that said that only if the majority of the majority supports something should it ever go through. In other words, only the majority of the Republicans, if 51% of Republicans, or maybe 27% of the entire House, wanted something, then he'd put it on the agenda. Otherwise, he would not. Well, Harry Reid needs to sit back and recognize that the Senate does not represent the American people. The American people are far more against the Iraqi war than the Senate is. He needs to stand firm. He needs to say to George Bush, look, I'm willing to negotiate with you about the terms of withdrawal, but you got to come talk to me. You got to sit down with me, with Nancy Pelosi, face to face, and we have to make a deal. And if you're not going to do that, Mr. President, then you know what? We've got other things to do. You're busy vetoing the rest of our agenda. Fine. We will have divided, stalemated government. You won't give children health care. You won't do any of the things to help America. You won't get our troops out of Iraq. We won't play ball. We'll just sit around and do nothing and wait for November 08 when the American people finally get a chance to have their ideas known. And I want to talk about health care when we come back, because healthcare is a classic example of not just how hard the heart is of Republicans, but how stupid their brain is. They're not just callous, my friends. They're idiots. Because the Republican plan of health care costs much, 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 much more than being generous, being given, being, I don't know, ethical, moral. Between recognizing the people in need that ostensibly Christianity talks about, which the Democrats support. Actually, when you're cruel, it's also bad economics. And I'll get to that after the break. If you want to call in and join in the discussion, and hopefully we can have Jennifer calling back, the toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
This is the Head-On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. A couple weeks ago, David Brooks, the conservative columnist for the New York Times, wrote a piece where he asserted flat out that Bush wasn't going to bomb Iran. He added, in parentheses and without further argumentation, trust me on this. Well, I don't trust David Brooks on this. I trust Bush's record of recklessness. I trust Bush's messianic complex. I trust Bush's macho. I trust Cheney's deviousness. I trust Cheney's infatuation with violence. I also trust Seymour Hersh's steady warnings over the last few years, and I trust the brilliant military analyst Michael Clare, who also warns us that Bush will bomb Iran. And I trust my own eyes and ears, which remember the same rhetorical shouts and flourishes that Bush and Cheney used in their warm-up to the Iraq War, and they're using them again. And now I trust John Tester, the populist senator from Montana, who just said at a little fundraiser the other day, I'd be more surprised if Bush didn't bomb Iran before the next election than if he did. That's a U.S. senator putting us all on alert. So don't trust David Brooks on this. He doesn't deserve it. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says, the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we... Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap.
There's nothing here. Nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Somebody's trying.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknight, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
from Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's the Week in Review. All topics are valid. What is on your mind? Toll-free number 877-4-HEAD-ON. I've been talking about the situation in Iraq, not just the political necessity of Shia and Sunni getting together, not just the politics going on in our Congress, but something that, I really fear is worse than all of that, the possibility of a catastrophic failure of a dam that could kill more people in a single day, perhaps, than any other single day in American history. We've got some callers on the line. Alan, what's on your mind?
Hey, I was just wondering about this Giuliani, who's running for president.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like he's the most beatable. He should be.
Is that your question? Do I think he's the most beatable?
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he's the most beatable. I fear Giuliani. I got to be honest with you. He should be beatable. They should all be beatable. One of the things that'll be interesting with Giuliani, if he were to win, and he is the front runner at the moment, though he's the front runner with a plurality, not a majority. He's certainly not near as certain to get the nomination as, say, Hillary Clinton is much farther ahead than the Democrats. And one of the things that'll be interesting if Giuliani wins is how much the religious right will desert him. Because on social issues, on abortion, on gay rights, for a Republican, he's awfully moderate. Now, he's not as good as the Democrats on those issues, but he's definitely better than the rest of the Republican field. He also has his own personal stuff. And failures, for example, on 9/11. I mean, people forget how after the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993, Rudy Giuliani decided to put the center for all emergency in New York City right there in the World Trade Center, the very building that was bombed in 1993. Not a very smart decision. But I do hear Giuliani. What's that?
I just said if the media just do its job, or the Democrats will fight back and just tell the public what's going on about, you know, like that issue you just talked about, and also the issue of abortion. He used to pay for abortions when he was a mayor of the city.
That's correct. That's exactly right. It's very interesting. The latter issue, the issue of the World Trade Center, I think if he wins the nomination, I guarantee you that will come up. Democrats will raise it. Hopefully independent media will raise it. What's interesting now really is his position on social issues, because a number of Republicans are very concerned about that. My fear is, though, that I think his positions, which is basically pro-choice, mostly pro-choice on abortion, mostly supportive of gay rights, civil unions, and the like, I think his positions are the majority American positions. And that's why I fear Rudy Giuliani. I mean, if we had a Christian fundamentalist like Governor Huckabee of Arkansas in there, then I think he would take positions that, you know, less than one-third of Americans support, and therefore it would hurt him in a general campaign. But Rudy Giuliani, precisely because he's moderate on social issues, can reach out to independents. I know a number of independents, including some friends of mine, who might vote for Giuliani over Hillary Clinton.
Doesn't Giuliani have, like, Pat Robertson supporting him, and Pat Robertson is set against gay people?
Well, that's true. No question about it. But Pat Robertson is going to support any of the Republican nominees, every one of them, no question about it. My hope is, if Giuliani wins, that some fool Christian fundamentalist will set up a third party, much as fools set up Ralph Nader's Green Party and hurt the left so much in 2000 and in 2004. And obviously, one of the most interesting things about the way our political system works is if you set up a third party, you hurt the people closest to you and you help the people farthest away from you. So Ralph Nader hurt progressives in a major way. If Christian fundamentalists set up a third party, and I hope they do, it will hurt the Republican nominee incredibly. Maybe they'll just stay home. But it'll be very interesting to see what happens there. I wouldn't count John McCain out. A lot of people don't talk about him because he's been so supportive of the Iraqi war. But I think he could still mount a formidable campaign. I hope it's someone like Romney, who I think is obviously see-through, obviously a flip-flopper, someone that it's obvious that no one can trust. And I think he's someone who would make a lot of people angry. So I kind of hope he wins.
Rodney, he's a libertarian. His views are libertarian.
I wouldn't say that. I'd say his views are he tells people what they want to hear. When he's Massachusetts governor, they're liberal. When he's running for the Republican nomination, they're right-wing conservative. When he's running for the general election, who knows what they'll be. But for all the accusations of Giuliani. Well, that's to some extent the problem with Giuliani, but Romney's even more of a flip-flopper than Giuliani. He's expressly changed his positions 180 degrees. Giuliani does it more with nuance. He'll say, for example, on abortion, oh, well, you know, I support a woman's right to choose, but I'll appoint judges like Scalia and Thomas, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, who you know will overturn Roe v. Wade. So he's a little more subtle about his the way he panders to the people he talks to than Romney is. And, I give him credit for that. He's subtle. He's smart about it. Romney, that's why I hope he doesn't win. I do fear Giuliani. I won't deny it.
Well, I'll support the Edwards Kucinich ticket.
Well, I wouldn't want an Edwards Kucinich ticket. I know a lot of people on the Horn would, but I think that would lose. I'll tell you, I was one of the things I wanted to comment on today was Edwards' ad that he's running, that the Horn is partly running on health care. And I understand why Edwards is saying it. His point is that Congress and the president, the vice president, that all of them have government health care provided by the United States government. I had it, too, when I worked as a staffer, as an attorney in Congress. And that it's not fair for the American people not to have government health care when the government has government health care. I get that. I agree with Edwards. He's absolutely right about that. But I still don't like that ad. And the reason I don't like that ad is that he says something that's just false. He says if Congress and the president don't give Americans health care in 6 months, then I'm going to use my power as the president to take health care away, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't have that power. It just doesn't exist. So it's great rhetoric, and he makes his point, which is that the government doesn't provide health care to the American citizens but provides it to themselves. And he could make that point truthfully in all kinds of ways, but he's just not telling the truth when he says that the president has power to take away congressional health care. It doesn't. It's a law. He can't do an executive order. The president has no power over such a thing. So go ahead.
The problem with most of the Democrats is that they – act too much like Republicans, and when that happens, they lose every time.
Well, I agree with you.
What Truman said.
Well, no, I agree. They shouldn't act like Republicans. I think that so far, we'll see where this goes, but so far they're doing the right thing with the Iraqi war funding. So far the House has done the right thing. So far Harry Reid has done the right thing, but I'm very concerned he's going to cave, and that's why I'm hoping people will give a call to their senator to say, hey, just relax. Do nothing. But whatever you do, tell Harry Reid not to have a bill that gives an up or down vote on funding. Just simply lay low. No funding until Bush negotiates with you. I'm really afraid they're going to give in and cave in. I'm very nervous about that. But so far,
I think they have to make Bush veto all these bills.
Well, the thing is that, well, and he did it once. But to make him veto it, it's got to get to the House and the Senate. And to get it through the Senate, either it has to get 60 votes, and they definitely don't have 60 votes, or they have to make an agreement with the Republicans to have it heard. Basically, Harry Reid can make a deal with Mitch McConnell, the head of the Republicans, to say, look, we won't, you know, don't filibuster our bill and the one that we want to get to the president that requires withdrawal that he's threatened to veto, and we won't filibuster your bill, which is the bill to give him the funding without questions asked. That's the deal that's on the table, and I'm urging Harry Reid to reject the deal, because as much as I would like to see, for propaganda purposes, them passing the House bill and making the president veto it, that certainly looks good, you know, shows Americans, hey, we Democrats are stopping this war and the president is in our way. I fear that the price of that propaganda victory is a real loss, is that they're going to get that $70 billion no-questions-asked bill through the Senate. And that's one that the president will sign. So I hear what you're saying, Alan, but in the strategic chess game that is congressional tactics, I think it's probably best for the Senate just to do nothing. Okay. Anything else, well, or should I go to my next call?
Okay. I just drove through your hometown. It looks good.
Oh, you just came through Nashville, Tennessee?
Yeah, I just drove right through it.
Terrific, terrific. I'm going to be in Nashville for Thanksgiving. In fact, I'm going to be gone all next week. I'll be in my hometown, so I'll be there shortly. Hey, thanks for your call, Alan. Call back again sometime.
Thank you.
Bye. All right, let's go to Jennifer. Jennifer, who tried to call in before, but had a bit of a coughing problem. It sounds like you're doing okay now, huh, Jennifer?
Yes, I'm all better.
Terrific. What's on your mind?
Well, the health care thing, for one.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, didn't Senator Bernie Sanders opt out of his health care?
I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me if he did.
I thought I heard him say that on the Hartman show one morning.
It's quite possible. I'm a big fan of Bernie Sanders, and I have no doubt that he could do such a thing, but I can't say that I know, so I don't want to say so on the air.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure either, but I think I heard him say that, and of course, my memory's not, you know, I'm old.
Yeah. Well,
but I swear I heard that, and if he did, you know, that's really admirable. And I think, you know, Senator Edwards feels that strongly about it, that's what he should do.
Well, I think so, too. The irony is that if Edwards were to opt out of the health care, that would actually be a real thing rather than his ad, which says, I'm going to use my powers as the president to stop Congress from getting health care. He can't do it. He just doesn't have powers as the president. He can introduce legislation that he asked Congress to pass to say that, you know, Congress loses its health care until the Americans get health care. And sure, I guess that at least he could do. He could introduce the legislation. But, you know, if he were to opt out, I almost wonder whether the Republicans would say, see, people are opting out of government health care, including even Bernie Sanders, and so therefore you don't need it. One of the things I want to talk about, though, and you gave me a great segue to do it, is the fact that denying health care to Americans, to poor, lower middle class Americans, to 47 million uninsured Americans, is not just immoral. It's not just heartless. It's bad economics, and let me explain why, and you probably already know this, Jennifer. The way it works now is people without insurance, okay, people who have conditions, let's say they have diabetes or high blood pressure or other treatable medical conditions, and they would normally, if they had health care, go to a doctor, get prescription medication, do things to protect themselves from a heart attack or a stroke or things like that. Maybe go and get dialysis. Because they can't afford health care, because they can't pay the few $100s it takes to go to a doctor and get the prescription medication that would save their lives, they have heart attacks, they have strokes, they have kidney failure. And then what happens? They get rushed in an ambulance, and they're sent to the emergency room of the nation's hospitals. Now, it is the law that people in an emergency situation have to be taken care of. So whereas you could get heart medication for a few $100s if you could afford it, because you don't have those few $100s, you have a heart attack, and then you have to go get emergency bypass surgery costing tens of thousands of dollars that's on the U.S. taxpayer. So
well,
here's my argument to Republicans. Here's my argument to
let
Republicans.
Let me
tell
you a story about
yeah,
that.
I want to hear your story in one second. Let me finish my argument, then you, I want to hear. I definitely want to hear your story. My argument to Republicans is simple. Totally forget the question of morality and of heartlessness. If you look at pure dollars and cents, it is cheaper to give 47 million Americans health care than it is to fund 47 million Americans in emergency rooms in American hospitals.
Right.
It actually costs
Absolutely. Less
money. That's my argument. Let me hear your story.
Well, first of all, I want to say that a trip to the emergency room, just a trip to get there without any treatment, is like about $1,000.
Sure, the ambulance is expensive.
You know, come on. It's crazy. Anyway, my story goes like this. I've been a nurse for 34 years. And just recently, I got pretty educated on the financial aspect of healthcare
in a facility. Right now, I have a patient who is being allowed to die simply because she does not have any insurance coverage. Mm-hmm. And here's the way it works. When you go into a healthcare facility, a long-term care facility, which she did because hospitals don't keep people very long, and she's a diabetic and had to have a leg amputated. So they sent her to a long-term care facility where I work. Now, that facility kept her there as long as they could. Medicare allows 100 days. They kept her there for that 100 days. And during that time, she developed some other problems. So she had to go on Medicaid, which is state. In order to qualify for state health care in this state, you have to be practically destitute.
Right.
I mean, you have to own no property, you have to sell the car, you know,
the
whole ball of wax. You have to have less than $2,000 in senior starvation.
Less than $2,000. Wow.
$2,000.
In total assets.
Right.
You have to practically be homeless. I mean, who has less than $2,000 in total assets when you sell all your furniture and bed and all?
Believe me, and I see them all.
Yeah. But, no, I know they're there. Go ahead.
What happens is, her husband, does not want to give up his home.
Yeah, I understand.
And so they are not aggressively treating the woman. She now has gone into renal failure, and they refuse to put her on dialysis because the state won't pay for it unless he sells his home, and he's not willing to do that. Now, isn't that lovely?
I think of creative solutions. You know what I would do if I were that couple? Get a divorce. Not out of lack of love.
What I would do too.
Get a divorce. Give the husband the home. And I'm just trying to think creatively. You can tell them my advice. Get a divorce. They can still live and love each other. But then maybe when this institution of marriage, which stands in their way, is out of the way, he owns the house, and she. Now the state would probably say you don't really have a divorce unless you separate. That's awful,
well,
Jennifer. That's just an awful.
Think
of the husband's choice. He's got to choose between something that may save the life of his wife, may not, and something that would definitely lose his house. That's an awful choice. I think the answer is a divorce. Let's separate loving couples as a way to help save lives. Yikes.
I think what he's thinking is, he's not a very well person either. This is an elderly couple.
Right, and he's
going
to need a place
to live.
I completely understand.
To see it from his point. It's not that he's being mean. He just doesn't know what to do, and nobody is there to help him.
Yeah,
divorce your wife.
Yeah, you can.
But that would definitely.
You could suggest it to him. You could say, "Look, do it out of love. Divorce out of love. Divorce it because you love her so much." I mean, that just shows the silliness, the ridiculousness of our policy. But I think you can actually suggest to him, look, I'm not a lawyer, but I talked to this guy on the radio, and he said, what happens if you divorce your wife? Then it's not her income anymore. You keep the house. I don't know.
Well, irritates me is that people like George Bush and Dick Cheney and Condi Rice and Joe Lieberman and all those horrible losers will have health care for the rest of their natural lives and never be faced with this dilemma. And that man and his wife pay taxes all of their life. So these idiots should have what they have.
That's correct.
It isn't
right.
There's something wrong with this picture.
There's a lot wrong with this picture. And the irony is that for all the Republicans that talk about, socialized health care, government health care, it's awful, as if the citizens of Canada and Britain are rising up, which I don't see them doing, and complaining about their government's health care. In fact, I don't know anyone who in Canadian or British person who complains about their health care system. But they make it seem like it's more expensive to have the government involved when actually it's cheaper. And that's my point about the emergency rooms, that if you prevent a dangerous condition, it is cheaper to give someone a few hundred dollars a year for heart medication or kidney dialysis or high blood pressure medication than it is to treat them for kidney failure or to amputate a leg, as you talked about, or you know, heart attack or stroke. And because we do require hospitals to treat emergencies, as we should, then all you have to do is just put together the dollars and cents. Which is cheaper? Give a few hundred people a few hundred dollars in heart medication, or take several hundred of those and pay tens of thousands of dollars for emergency quintuple bypass surgery that at the end of the day, after you've paid the tens of thousands of dollars, might just fail and the person dies anyway. And even if they survive, they have a weaker heart, then they've just taken the medication to begin with. I mean, that's the thing.
Now,
it's not just a question of being cruel. It's dollars and cents.
Right. It just makes sense. But, and I have been trying to figure out what the Republicans are thinking of. You know, how do they justify this in their mind? I mean, even stupid stood up there and said, everybody has health care in the United States. Just go to an emergency room. Has he no concept
right.
of what that costs?
Right. I mean, that's what Bush said. That's one of the reasons why I raised this point. That's what he said. Yeah, yeah. You need health care? Just go to the emergency room. You know, has George Bush ever been to an emergency room? Has he ever seen the long line of people?
I used to work in an emergency room. If there is anything that is irritating, to say the least, to an emergency room worker, it's people using it as a clinic.
Right, because we don't have clinics.
Clinic.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And yet, that's what the president is saying. That's what he's saying. This is a direct quote from President Bush. People have access to health care in America. After all, you just go to an emergency room. Quote, unquote. What world is our president living in? It's more than idiot. You know, it's more than idiot. It kind of goes with what I was talking about just a couple days ago, where I talked about the difference between being crazy and delusional and being evil. If you're an idiot if you don't know that something's going on, but you're crazy, but you know, you if you actually don't realize that, oh, it costs more to go to an emergency room, then you're an idiot. But if you realize it costs more, if you realize it's more expensive, but you still don't want to give health care to ordinary Americans, you're no longer an idiot. You're cruel. You're evil. You're someone who's basically saying you're too poor to deserve health care in America. Go out, particularly with children's health care, go out, six-year-old, and get a job. Go to Thailand and sew Nikes together because you, six-year-old, are just going to have to die. If you were a fetus, we'd save your life because we care about fetuses. But babies, goodbye. You're poor. You don't deserve to live.
SCHIP, by the way. And boy, do people misunderstand SCHIP. Even people I see talking on the news about SCHIP are talking about it being for poor children. It is not for poor children. It is for middle-class families who would be destroyed by a major health crisis in their family.
Right. It's lower middle class. It's working families, people who are working, not people who are on welfare, people who are on Medicaid because they have the $2,000 in assets you were talking about, but would exactly, if their kid got leukemia, they would be destroyed. That's exactly right. It's for tens of millions of Americans who are struggling to get by but are making it now but wouldn't be if they had a crisis. That's exactly right.
So they would rather let these people fall through the cracks. Now, I have a...
Well, they don't care. They're not Republican voters. Why should they care?
What?
Heck, if they don't, if they die, they won't be able to vote for the Democrats. So it's a plus-plus in Karl Rove's book. Right?
God, do you really think so? I was just going to ask you, what do you think is behind all this? What do you think they're thinking about? And you answer
You know, it's very hard to put motivations in there. It takes a real cynical person to say, well, they're letting them die so they don't vote for the Democrats. But who knows? That's my point. It's not just that they're heartless. They actually fail the economic test, too. So I don't know what they're thinking. You know, one of these days, I'll tell you what, next time I have one of the right-wing fanatics that I bring on the air from time to time, I will ask them that question, I promise. Thanks for your call, Jennifer. I got to wrap up. I am going to be gone all next week. We're going to replay some of the shows that I know many of you enjoyed. The show on global warming, the one on the connection between the FBI and white supremacists and Islamic terrorists. But if you'll tune in this Sunday, and the horn isn't on the weekend, but you can get it on my website at radioinsidescoop.com. You can actually listen to and watch a video. The video will be up on my website, radioinsidescoop.com. I want to talk about a certain propaganda. It's the propaganda used by the Palestinians during the Intifada. You may remember the case of a young boy hiding behind his father in a barrel, ostensibly to avoid Israeli gunfire. The boy died, and they blamed the Israelis. Well, new evidence is coming out that actually the Palestinians shot that boy. It's an amazing story. I will show you the propaganda and the video Sunday at 6:30 p.m. on RadioInsideScoop.com. For now, this is Mark Levine signing off. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
This is the Quality News Network. Although the House passed a $50 billion spending bill for the Iraq war last night, which is tied to a troop withdrawal by the end of next year, Democratic leaders are uncertain about the bill's prospects in the Senate. They say they won't pay for war funding unless it's tied to a timetable for pulling out U.S. troops, a condition President Bush has insisted he will veto. Defense Secretary Robert Gates spoke to Congress today about what could happen if lawmakers do not pass a war spending bill. For example, he said there could be up to 100,000